You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 10 October, we've got U.S. inflation data for September due 2:30 our time, previous 2.5%, expected 2.3%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Petri Redenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors. How are they trading Sasol to reduce that initial entry price? We're chatting with PwC Africa Agribusiness Leader, local farmers adopting new approaches and technologies to combat food security pressures. And Harry Scherzer, he's from Future Forex. Financial illiteracy in South Africa and the impact on the economy. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: report on racial profiling and discrimination by medical schemes delayed again. The investigation was concluded January 2021. Business Day: SARS takes aim at tax dodging holders of crypto assets and trades. It says more than 5.8 million South Africans hold a crypto asset. Yo, that's a lot. Morning markets: US was green, S&P 0.7% higher, NASDAQ up 0.8%. Over in the East, mostly green, Sydney the exception, down a tenth, Tokyo up a third of a percent, Hong Kong 3.7% higher, Tencent 2.5% higher. Commodities mixed on the red side: gold 2,632 and Brent 77.23. On the green side, platinum 968 and palladium 1,058. Rand 17.63, Bitcoin 60,880, and top 40 opening call 415 points to the green. That's almost a little over 0.5% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the Money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Petri Redenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate the early morning time as always. Sasol, a stock that many out there are fans of. Certainly you are one of them. But chatting with you yesterday, you talking around how you're kind of, in a sense, trying to get your average entry price down. You're trading the range, sort of the 120 to 130 range. I mean, I look at a weekly chart. It's been there for one, two, three, four. This is kind of the fifth week in a row that it's been in that range and perhaps offering some opportunity.
Yeah, good morning, Simon. And I mean, quite right. So 120 to 130, we've had three opportunities in the last couple of months, essentially since the 11th of September, where we've managed to buy some sort of around 119 and then sell it at 130, buy a little bit at 118 yesterday or 117.88 yesterday. We're looking to obviously sell that at around 130 as well. We've managed to get some at 121. We sold at 130.80. So we've essentially had three opportunities to do that. And now is our fourth opportunity to do it, you know, present at the time. Obviously, you know, we may be wrong, but as we've been, or as I've been sort of reiterating for the last year, I feel a bit like a broken record. Sasol is one of those companies that really just offers an enormous amount of value for us. And we have it in our offshore, in our local portfolio as well as our offshore portfolio. But, you know, it's the biggest position in our local portfolio, which has been a bit of an anchor, right? It's been a bit of a drag, if you will, on performance. So we have to find a way to reduce our average price, which was somewhere north of 170 at one point. We've got that now down to 147, so still very high, but we're taking essentially, let's say, one-fifth of the value of the position, and we're using that as a trade size to take these small scalps to take 10 bucks out of the stock at a time, you know, not necessarily with a longer-term view than that. We're just wanting to sort of, you know, eke out a small percentage of the open loss that we're sitting with every time we do this, And it gives us, a good opportunity to at least stay active in the market as well.
I take your point, and I mean, and looking at this chart, and if I switch to daily, and we go back to sort of May of this year, it gets sub 120 a number of times, but it seems to have good support there. I mean, for folks who are liking the Sasol story but haven't been convinced by the chart action, there certainly does seem to be good buying activity when it gets to that sort of 120 and lower level.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes it dips through, like if you look at yesterday, it dipped a little lower than that, so it got a bit hurt. But then you look again this evening, earlier this morning, China's put out some news that, okay, here's the $500 billion we were talking about.
Yeah.
Oil prices up, China's up 4%. So I think that we probably see this sort of action, let's call it from mid-teens, so 115-ish would be the sort of lower end of that range, 120 would be the higher end of that range. You'd probably be able to, at least from our perspective, buy it quite safely there and try to unload it around 130. And that would just be a little range trade, right? So we are using that as an opportunity to lower our average cost so that we do not have to get rid of our core position in the stock. And, obviously, we are still very much of the belief that it's one of the shares at this stage in the JSE that offers way the most value. So that's why we would much rather prefer to keep our longer-term strategic position in the stock. But if we can trade tactically around it to reduce risk and, make a little bit of alpha, then we're going to do that.
Yeah, no, I take your point. Absolutely. It rather than just the passive, got the stock, let's sit and wait. And there's perhaps some opportunity as it kind of moves around to enhance that return. We'll leave it there. Bekle Radenhurst, Serenia Capital Advisors. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you holding Sasol? Are you trading Sasol? I got to say, on the Twitters and chatting with Petri and many others, and let's be clear, I mean, we chatted with Maureen Pick from Old Mutual recently as well. Sasol's certainly a big stock in many portfolios. You holding, you trading, or perhaps you're just staying away. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Andrew Dale, PwC Africa Agribusiness Leader. Andrew, appreciate the early morning time. A fairly shocking stat that came out from a recent report from yourself and your colleagues. South Africans bought 3% less food in 2023. Our consumers, our citizens are absolutely under pressure. Our farmers are efficient. They are productive. But in the report you put out, there's more that they can do to, I suppose, produce food and ultimately perhaps even a lower cost for consumers.
Good morning, Simon, to you and your listeners. Yes, that is an alarming stat. I think there's been just a number of factors that have been impacting, obviously, on the consumers. I mean, if you look at the high interest rates that we've had for a significant amount of time, we've had to obviously make a lot of decision when it comes to the grocery bill at the end of every month. Mm-hmm. And because of this, it has a big impact on the farmers to make sure that they stay efficient and that they can be sustainable and also make a living and contribute to the food supply within our country.
And one of the points you put forward, and it really struck me because it's not a farming or a technology. You talk around, I mean, many farms are family businesses. They're owned by a family. And then the question comes into succession planning because, the patriarch or the matriarch is the farmer. The kids don't want to move into it. There needs to be a really good plan here to keep that farm operating post-retirement or perhaps the passing on of the primary farmer.
Yes, this is a very significant focus point. I mean, if you look at all the foodstuffs that we buy, in the retail stores, everything pretty much starts from coming from the various family businesses. And, what we've noted is that as the family business moves from the first generation to the second generation, there's about a 40% drop-off in terms of success. And when you move to the third generation, it drops down to about a 32% success rate. And the only way to ensure that this sustainability and longevity of these family businesses is to start professionalizing that family business. And, you know, one of the big focus points that we have is talking about things like the family constitution in terms of who can come into the business, how does succession planning work, and how do you professionalize that business so that the family business can continue.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's a very big focus point. And we actually run a number of sessions with different family businesses to sort of guide them through these sort of pitfalls that we've seen over a number of years that have been arising.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, it's across industries. We're talking agri here and farming, but it is a challenge which many, and in fact, if not all family businesses at some point need to manage. There is, of course, then moving to data. There is a lot of data in farming. You use the phrase where dirt and data intersect. And there is a lot that farmers can do around data. And it's more than just, you know, which crops are growing better. It's issues around traceability and you know, helping the food companies know the quality and origin of food. Data and farming are, I imagine, going to be huge into the future.
Yeah, no, it's become significant in terms of how do you professionalize your commercial farming business in terms of the data, because all your suppliers or your customers that you're going to be supplying to, they need to know where does your product come from, how was it grown, where was it grown, what sort of pesticides, herbicides were used, and also to combat the, you know, rising prices and pressure on you in terms of your selling prices. You need to be able to apply, you know, the whole thing around precision farming. And there's a big focus on how to do more with less. And if you've got the data, it can really help you to make better decisions and also to manage your supply chain management, how to manage your finances. So this is becoming really extremely important. And I mean, if you just look at all the different agri co-ops that are out there, there's a number of them that do a lot of this data management, data collection. And I know that they also then provide a lot of support to the commercial farmers. And it's a case of how do the farmers then use that data to improve their operations.
And you mentioned the likes of pesticides there. Of course, the farms operate in the broader communities. ESG, environmental, social and governance, is an important part of the agribusiness as well. And in fact, in some ways even more so, because it's such a critical part. We need food. We have to eat. They also need to measure and understand the ESG story around their business as well.
That's definitely correct. So, you know, at this stage, you could consider yourself maybe being a small commercial farming operation and, you know, ESG is not that applicable to you. But the problem is that this is actually coming down the supply chain. It's getting more and more important. So as a number of listeds are starting to adopt the whole ESG principles and reporting on ESG, you know, environmental sustainability and governance, they need to start reporting on their suppliers' ESG factors as well. And how are they telling their story? And this is where if farmers can start to prepare themselves to start collecting this data and tell their story, there will be a lot successful with some of the suppliers, because then they've already got this information.
It's a good point. The retailer wants to tell that good story. We've seen some of them lean quite heavy into it. They need the sort of support from the farmer community as well. We'll leave it there. Andrew Dale, PwC Africa Agribusiness Leader. Appreciate the early morning time. Let your money benefit from experience with Stanlib Asset Management. Find out about Stanlib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Harry Scherzer, CEO of Future Forex. Harry, appreciate the time today. Data from the FSCA, the Human Sciences Research Council, shows that South Africans are financially, frankly, illiterate. Half of South Africans, or 51%, simply just not cracking it. We've got a lot of inequality. We've got unemployment challenges. But financial literacy is a huge problem for the country and, frankly, the economy.
Absolutely, Simon. It's really damaging to the economy as a whole. And what you'll find is that it's not just the low-income population, but actually throughout the income areas, South Africans just don't understand finance and financial literacy as well as they should.
That's a great point you make. I mean, everyone's going to assume this is low income, but the data's across. This could be the fancy person in a penthouse and a fancy car. We just lack it regardless of our wealth.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw a poll on X the other day, which basically had three options. It said, would you rather A, invest in a 7% yielding asset, B, pay off your car at 9%, or C, pay off your fashion retail account at 20% interest. And more than half the votes, it was a South Africa-centered poll, more than half the votes were for invest in a 7% asset. And I went to go look at the comments, and basically, obviously, it was invest in the asset because assets are good. And it's just remarkable because obviously we know as financially literate individuals that you have to pay off the most expensive first, which is the 20%, then pay off the 9%, and then only consider a 7% generating asset with money. So it's things like that. And these were higher net wealth individuals or medium net wealth individuals that were getting the simple question wrong, which really makes you think, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, assets are great, but debt is worse. And we see it in the debt levels as a country and the debt extended to private individuals, which does, I mean, you know, COVID aside, keep on creeping higher.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just getting worse. It's a really terrible thing for South Africa as a whole. And I just personally don't think that South Africa is doing enough to educate people on financial literacy. There's no school course on financial literacy. You get maths, you get languages, you get whatever else, but there's nothing that actually teaches you how to be financially literate from a young age.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it isn't being taught anywhere. And truthfully, governments around the world are not a good example of how to be financially literate. And this, obviously, it flows into not saving enough. It flows, therefore, into not enough for retirement. But it can also impact on businesses, because these 50-odd% of people who are not massively financially literate are working for running and operating businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what happens is you'll have people who start businesses with a business plan which simply doesn't make sense because there's not enough revenue to cover the costs, even in the long term. And it's an issue because it means that you're basically destined for failure, and that doesn't help anyone. I personally saw a business like this and thought to myself, it's amazing that someone would start a business where even their long-term prospects are not profitable. We think, why would you start it then if you can't make money over time? But just so few people understand the actual maths behind it that it becomes a real issue. And again, it goes back to education. It goes back to the idea that they were never taught.
Yeah. You mentioned business models, which just don't work. It's small details as well. I mean, you're from Future Forex. You do FX transactions. And folks are going to look at that and probably just phone their bank, whereas a quick Google will save you money. I mean, I've in the olden days done FX transactions through banks, and it was a terrifying experience in terms of A, the experience, but also, frankly, the fees.
Yeah, Simon, and I think they're even more to blame in truth, the traditional banks, because what they do is they intentionally try to hide the fees. They won't tell you what you're being charged. They rather bake it into a spread. So you have to have a high degree of financial literacy to say, right, the rate on Google is currently 17.5-1, but I'm being charged 18. That's 50 cents per dollar. And if I'm buying, I don't know, $10,000, that really adds up, you know? And this is where people don't realize, number one, that they're being charged a fee. And number two, they don't realize how much that fee is. So that little bit of extra financial education, financial literacy can ensure that businesses and individuals alike can save money, which is highly needed in this society.
And you make a great point there as well around hidden fees. Oftentimes it is, I mean, I don't want to say it's a business model, although sometimes it feels like it, to almost take advantage of the lack of financial literacy.
Yeah. And, you know, Simon, they're trying to pass into law something where you have to spend 0.4% of your after-tax profits as a company on financial literacy, and you need to write down exactly what you've done, which I think is the right, it's going the right direction, trying to say, right, let's put money into financial literacy. But the problem is that it's almost treating the symptom rather than the cause. You're saying, right, hide your fees, make as much money as you can, but then put this tiny bit back into financial literacy, rather than saying from the outset, educate people on your products, educate people from the ground up on what you do. And this is what Future Forex are trying to do differently, where we're trying to say, we don't want a single customer who doesn't fully understand what they're being charged, why they're being charged, and how this all works, which is something that hasn't been done by financial institutions for decades.
Yeah, it absolutely hasn't. And I mean, we are bashing on financial institutions because they're an easy bash, but there's a lot of other industries as well. We'll leave it there. That's Harry Scherzer. He's a CEO of Future Forex. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Casey Sprake from Anchor yesterday. Food inflation and early signs it's starting to rise again. The UN food inflation index certainly moving higher, and we're seeing a little bit in our latest inflation data. We asked you, have you noticed higher food prices? Over 80%. Said yes, food prices always go up. And that does seem to be the story. They might go up fast, they might go up slow, but when do they come down? It seems never. The rest was split between saying it seems stable and some of you saying it's coming down, but only a little. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Rent or buy your home.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.